Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Average high temperature for today, Bob, is 31.7 degrees. It's the average high.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Well, let's see. That'd be the average high. Yeah, and the average low is 19. What are our numbers today?
We're looking at mid-40s, and we're almost there.
And what's the overnight low going to be?
Down into, I think, the 20s or 30s. Hold on. I just read it on the air, so
yeah,
I know it.
Who listens to the weather?
Mid-30s tonight.
Wow. Instead of 19.
Yeah, but mid-40s tomorrow, too, and maybe rain.
The and actually, it's still on average getting cooler every day, even though we've been dodging this bullet. 31.7 is the average high for today, 31.6, 31.5, 31.2. So the trend continues on down to 30 for an average high, but we ain't there. Eric Zorn joins us now. Hello, Mr. Zorn. How are you today?
I'm good, John. You know, it's funny you should be talking about this because there is obviously there's the solstice, right, on the 21st of December, and that's when the sun is furthest away. But you're right; there's this like month long lag between then and then when the temperatures begin their slow rise back up again. And that's sort of, we never really celebrate that or observe it. But it's like, what is the date on your chart there? It's somewhere in like the 20th of January or something like that, where we've actually bottomed out.
We're returning back. Yeah, I don't.
Yeah,
my chart doesn't go that far, but I understand what you're saying. I would imagine that the average coldest day of the year, the average coldest day of the year in Chicago, would be in February, wouldn't you?
It feels like February is just such a dark and gloomy month. But I think that because we're so tired of it being cold, but my memory is that it's mid to late January is when the things begin to turn around, and we should celebrate that day because that's when we sort of break the back of winter, right? Where we're on the way back, we're on the way towards spring and summer again, and yet that usually goes unremarked, except not on the John Williams radio program.
No, there's a couple of us here who are very interested in finding little mental games to play with ourselves so that we get through the throes of winter, like December 22nd when the days start to get longer, and even a week before then when at least the afternoon sun is a little longer, even though the day is still shorter. I'm sorry, I just walked down that road with you, but that's all true. But you're right. Let's find the day where we turn the corner on the average coldest day. And now we are on our way to warmer weather, so I'm all for that.
You get the longer days, and then you get the warmer days, and then pretty soon it's summer, and we're complaining about how hot it is. So.
Yeah, but 10 minutes somewhere in between, there's about a 10-minute span where we go, now this is nice. On this day, Eric, in 1999, The Sopranos premiered on HBO.
Wow.
Well, that should be significant to you, I would think, because aren't you just now watching for the first time The Sopranos?
I just finished. Johanna and I just finished watching The Sopranos a few months ago, and it's just this great experience. We felt like we were the last people in America to watch it, but then we found out that Mary Schmeek had just watched it. There were a bunch of people who, I think it was a pandemic thing. There were a lot of people who felt like, okay, I've heard about The Sopranos all these years, and I've never like set aside time because it's 6 or 7 seasons. It depends on how you block it up. The last season was sort of cut in half, but it's 80 some episodes. And you think, I don't have time for this. This is much too long. I don't have the, but then in the pandemic, you did have time for it. So we sat down and we plowed through it. And it is just incredible TV. You've watched it, you know.
No, I have not. I have not.
Oh, you haven't?
No,
you haven't?
Oh,
so you can be the last person in America to watch The Sopranos. It's unbelievably good. And it holds up extremely well. So I really recommend that, even though I hope we're out of the worst of the pandemic right now. We were watching, it was 15 years ago, I think, that the final episode played, the one that everyone keeps talking about, but I'm not going to say anything about since you haven't watched it.
But, spoiler alert.
but no, it is just a terrific show, and you got to watch it. And I'm told The Wire is also really, really good, and we haven't watched that yet either. So,
yeah.
So that's next on our list.
We watched that, as I recall, front to back. The Wire is as good as it gets, especially that was network TV, right? Was that an NBC show, or was that like an HBO or something?
No, I think it was HBO. It's
HBO.
A little embarrassing because we're actually friends with one of the actors in the show, and it's kind of awkward because we see him and we haven't watched the show yet.
Yeah, Eric.
I know. It's bad.
It's sort of like I know people who have written books, and some of them are friends. And I, you know, but to say I read your book means I've spent hours, you know, reviewing your work, which should be a pleasurable thing. They wrote a nice book, I'm sure, but I can't say that I've read every word of every book my friends have written, and I hate that.
Yeah, it's a big commitment to do that. I think the only friend of mine whose work I've read in toto is Scott Turow, the attorney, you know, presumed innocent in all his books. That Scott writes these terrific legal thrillers, and he puts out one every couple of years, and they're just they're great reads, and I get through them quickly. It doesn't feel like an obligation at all. But yeah, you know, a lot of people put out books, and you walk into a bookstore, you see all these books people have written, and you think, I wish I had time for all these things. But
yeah, I have that same feeling. Eric Zorn's the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel. Speaking of reading, it's a weekly newsletter with commentary, comedy, stuff like that, tweets. Search for the Picayune Sentinel online, or you can email ericzorn@gmail.com, and he'll put you on the mailing list. By the way, he's also a member of the Mincing Rascals podcast. I didn't just now mention that, I don't think. We'll probably talk about this tomorrow, the ban on assault-style weapons in Illinois. It's a law that is a bill right now. The governor will sign it. It'll become law. It'll be immediately challenged. And I'm hearing from smart people saying it will not hold up constitutionally. Which makes one wonder then, why did they write a law that they almost certainly should have known would not be found constitutional? Do you have an opinion about that, Eric?
I don't have a strong opinion about that. I know that it is certainly legal to restrict the sales of certain kinds of arms. It is against the law, for the most part, to have anything that would be called a machine gun, you know, an automatic fire weapon where you just hold the trigger down and it sprays bullets. So the law, we are allowed, even though the Second Amendment says, you know, your rights shall not be infringed, that we do infringe on the rights of people of certain ages, of certain criminal backgrounds, and certain kinds of weapons we don't allow people to have. We don't allow them to carry, you know, shoulder-mounted rocket firing devices and things like that. So I don't know that this will be found unconstitutional. And there was an assault weapons ban in this country back in the 90s. So, and I think there are eight or nine other states where there are similar restrictions on these kind of weapons. A lot of it is going to be symbolic, because not that many people. I mean, I know there are these horrible incidents like in Highland Park, but you know, the big problem with guns in our society are these illegal guns that are on the streets. They're the handguns that do most of the damage and are responsible for most of the suicides that are involved in firearms. So some of it does feel a little performative. We're going to go into court, obviously, quickly. The Illinois Rifle Association has said that their next stop is going to be the courthouse.
Yeah.
I get a sense, an overall sense, from J.B. Pritzker's inaugural speech yesterday that he's really positioning himself as the most, you know, liberal, progressive, Democratic leader who's a plausible candidate for president in 2024 if Joe Biden steps back. That he's got a lot of that Bernie Sanders cred without being identified as a socialist. And maybe I'm just imagining things here, but I just felt like that speech yesterday was very aggressive in terms of, you know, he lays out this vision about making abortion a constitutional right in Illinois, preschool available for every family, public colleges free to children and working class families. That it does seem to me like he is positioning himself for a run should that opportunity develop. And then, you know, and maybe even if he stays in office, looking at 2028, where there may be an opening.
Joe Biden stays in office. Well, he certainly has the money to finance his own campaign, too, doesn't he?
Yes, he's very wealthy. And like I say, I just felt like that speech yesterday was kind of strikingly positive in terms of its having this agenda, laying out his roadmap for the next 4 years, which I think a lot of it's not going to happen, probably. Getting a constitutional amendment through is very difficult, as we've discovered. And so I think you've got a situation where he is just sort of defining himself politically, and he's going to sit back and wait and see what happens with Joe Biden. Because if Biden runs, he's not going to run. I don't think any Democrat's going to seriously challenge Biden, even though there's a lot of feeling among Democrats that maybe Biden is going to be a little old to be president. I don't think anyone's going to really rise up to challenge him. But Pritzker's there in the wings.
Why did you reference a constitutional amendment being a difficult thing to pass?
Well, if you remember, we did the thing about the a couple years ago, and Austin Berg and I debated it on the Mincing Rascals and also in print about the so-called fair tax or the graduated income tax, which is the way the federal government taxes income. It's the way it's done in most states. And they were able to stop that here because to do that required a constitutional amendment, which is a fairly high threshold. So I think it's something like you got to get 60% support from the electorate to do it, which is a high bar. That's a huge landslide in American politics.
Sure, but what does that have to do with JB being governor today? What is the point about that?
Well, I mean, I think he may just push for this. He's going to identify himself in that fashion by saying, "I am the governor who pushed for this constitution. Then I'm the one who is protecting the rights of LGBTQ people. I'm the one who is backing all these." Free schooling options, the free preschool.
Right, although, just pick some of those items. I know some of those are obviously controversial. Not everybody thinks those are all swell ideas, but I think a lot of those, I think pre-K schooling for kids, that shouldn't be a national issue. If he had no aspiration other than to be governor of Illinois, he should be pushing for those things as well, you know?
Right, well, he's the education governor, right? He wants to do that. And if you notice, he says that public colleges are free for working class families, and there's a lot that's hidden in that working class families definition. That it's not like college is free for everyone, and it's going to be sort of the way they do things with city colleges in Chicago. It seems to me like it's going to be so where there's an income threshold, and then we're going to subsidize the tuition payments for people below a certain income threshold. It's a very populist thing to talk about for the most part. I think most people feel like, you know, education these days is such an important part of our nation's future and our state's future that to invest in that makes sense to a lot of people. And I think if he can sell that as a really positive step for the state's economy rather than a drag on it, he will have a winner.
Yeah, well, I'm with you on I think that we should do more to educate young children at no cost, or at least make it income-based and make sure that everybody has ample access to early childhood education as early as we can possibly make it. And I still think that education should be free to anybody up to the 14th grade, up to your junior year in college. But I'm not the king yet. I just wanted to mention this about the bill that the governor will probably sign about weapons. It ends the sale, delivery, and purchase of assault weapons and high-capacity magazines, calls for owners of guns on the assault weapons list to provide information to the state police, and immediately bans the possession and use of rapid-fire devices, according to a statement from Senate Leader Harman's team. Other elements include expediting universal background checks and exemptions for hunters and private security contractors. The FOID card age would remain at 21. Talking to the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel, our friend Eric Zorn, the longtime columnist in Chicago. You read him for years in the Tribune. Once in a while, he pops up in the Daily Herald. By the way, Eric, we were talking about the warming of the weather. It's been real nice, but on average, the days are, even though they're getting longer, and I know 24 hours in a day, you take my point, though, that the average temperature is getting colder. We turn the corner on January 24th.
Okay.
That's when it goes, instead of 31.1, now it's 31.2, 31.3. And when you get to the end of February, where the average high temperature on the 23rd is 31.1, that would be the average coldest day of the year in Chicago, 31.1 on the 23rd of January. When you get to the end of February, the average high temperature is just under 41 degrees. So, man, you get through February, and, you're not completely out of the woods, but we're getting away with it this time, Eric. We've had nice weather. Hooray.
We're getting there. And that's just 2 weeks from today is January 24th. So let's have a party on the air on the 24th.
You have set my mind on that. I think I'll make some sort of announcement. Mayor Lori Lightfoot is out with a new ad. This one takes on crime head on. Here's part of that.
You wouldn't know it by watching the news or listening to the haters. But on crime, Mayor Lightfoot's got a plan. She's putting more police on the streets and getting more guns off them. When it comes to new strategies, new technology, Lightfoot's invested more than any mayor. Those are facts. Anyone that says there are simple solutions is lying. We didn't get here overnight, and we have a long way to go. But Lightfoot won't quit until we're the safest big city in America.
Mm. What's your read on that, Eric Zorn?
I thought that that tagline at the end, that she's not going to quit until we're the safest big city in America, was a very interesting line to be delivered from somebody who's been in office for 4 years when crime has gotten worse. You know, to say that she's got a plan, that we're making this the safest big city in America, I think people are going to look at the crime stats, they're going to look at how things feel on the streets here, how things are going on the CTA, and they're going to say, what is this plan exactly? You're hiring more officers, getting guns off the streets. Are you really turning things around? And you compare that to the message that Paul Vallis is giving, which he opens his commercial, which is, where he talks about combative leadership is failing us. And he's the one who's really going after the crime issue. I think it's going to hurt Lightfoot, the fact that she's is an incumbent. It's a great ad for a challenger that she put out. But I don't know that it's a good ad to say that people who are complaining about crime in Chicago are haters and that she's got a plan. The question people are going to be asking is, okay, well, what is your plan and how has it been working so far? You've had 4 years in office to do this. And yes, there's the pandemic, but I thought it was I thought it was strangely vague in terms of how she's promising to turn things around.
I thought it would have been hard for her to look in the camera and say that stuff. So they've got these other guys saying that stuff, but Lori lacks credibility, I think, when she tries to say those things, even if they're true. The murder rate is down 11%, and for 2 years it's been down. And it's not going to go to zero when Paul Vallis or Willie Wilson become mayor, if they do. It's still going to be hundreds and hundreds of people get killed and shot every year. And the solution to that, by the way, isn't throw them in jail. I don't know what Lori Lightfoot's got in mind, and I don't know that she should have the job for another term. But this idea that we're going to get us a better mayor and crime's going to go away, I think is folly.
Yes, I agree with that. And also, you talk about making the safest big city in America. You look at the murders, the murder rates and the murders in places like Los Angeles and New York. Yes, the numbers are coming down in Chicago, but they're still sky high compared to those cities, compared to those big cities. And that's really what we have to ask ourselves is who is taking on the challenge of really bringing us into line with these other big cities that are comparable to ours. Yes, she can point to some downticks. I think people will look at 2019 as the baseline year, and then you have the pandemic years, and now we're coming back. So that if you have to look sort of 4 years ago versus now. And you're absolutely right. None of these candidates, Vallis, who's running on the Law and Order platform, even Brandon Johnson has a crime program. He's running fairly high in the polls, according to our search in the surveys. He's got a kind of Jamal Green has like a $5 billion anti-crime program. And it does involve investments in these communities, jobs programs, activity programs, education programs, things that make up the whole panoply of social dysfunctions that lead to crime. So I don't think anybody is saying that the solution is simple. The idea that the haters are saying that there's a simple solution and they're lying about that. I don't know who is saying that the solution is simple, but it's going to be interesting. And I can't wait for some of these mayoral forums that are going to happen where the candidates actually engage with one another.
Would you have excised the word haters from that ad? Because that does sound pretty defensive.
It does, and I think that it also puts on a defensive people who are legitimately concerned about crime, who would like to see some common sense solutions, some realistic solutions for bringing crime down. We're not going to be the safest big city in America anytime soon, given our crime rates. And to say that you're a hater if you're criticizing Mayor Lightfoot and you're criticizing her for her combative leadership style and so on, yeah, I thought that was ill chosen. But the basic message that she has to deliver is that she is making progress and that she is going to improve these numbers as time goes on. But I think she's sort of promising a miracle here, saying make us the safest big city in America. That's not going to happen.
Eric Zorn writes stuff like this in the Picayune Sentinel, and he publishes a lot of your stuff too. You can subscribe to the Picayune Sentinel online or just email ericzorn@gmail.com. I'll talk to you tomorrow on the Mincing Rascals podcast, Eric.
Great, John. Thanks.